Well, welcome to the Train Well, Race Well podcast, where we talk all things running and more. From the roads to the trails, I'm your host, CJ Hitz. And I have the distinct privilege of sitting across the table right now from a guy named Travis Macy, who is from Evergreen, Colorado. So I had the opportunity to come up and meet him in his hometown, and just going to be an exciting interview as Travis actually just recently released a book, and it was actually released yesterday, April 14th. I first met Travis at another race in Colorado, which, you know, so many of us runners cross paths and end up meeting each other. And Travis recently wrote a book called The Ultra Mindset, an endurance champion's 8 core principles for success in business, sports, and life. And I want to read you just a little bio here on Travis. Travis is a finisher of more than 100 ultra-distance competitions in 16 countries. Travis Macy is a professional endurance athlete who produces world-class results due primarily to an exceptional mindset. His racing exploits have been covered by the New York Times, Runner's World, Adventure Sports, Competitor, Ultra Running, Trail Runner, and Breathe, among others. A sought-after motivational speaker, Macy also coaches endurance athletes, writes about racing and travel, and provides independent college counseling, including writing instruction and test prep to high school students. So, as I mentioned earlier, he lives in Evergreen, Colorado with his wife and 2 young children. Travis, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks, CJ. It's an honor to be here with you and the listeners. I really enjoyed talking with you before we started recording here, and just kind of feel like we're kindred spirits, you know, for running and just outlook on life, and looking forward to sharing some of these questions.
You bet. Well, as so many of these running podcasts start off, I'm going to just ask you to kind of take us back and share a little bit about how you got started in running and in sports in general.
Yeah, well, thanks. You know, I grew up here in Evergreen, the same small town in Colorado in the mountains where I live now and where we're sitting today in my favorite coffee shop. And it's a great place. You know, it was a great place to grow up, and I feel very fortunate to be able to raise my own kids here, because one of the reasons is, you know, in addition to the great schools, it's a great place to be outside. You know, there's trails, there's mountains, there's fresh air, you know, there's snow in the winter, there's sun in the summer. It's a nice place to be. So, you know, as I talk about in the book, you know, when I was a little kid, my dad was doing long distance races. He started with marathons. You know, my parents had come from outside of Detroit, and you know, my dad grew up playing, you know, traditional sports, but wasn't really a runner. And then he came out to Colorado, and gosh, what happened? I think he saw a marathon on TV, and he kind of asked himself, could I do that? And he went out, and he as he tells it, he didn't enjoy the first marathon, but he made it through. And for some reason, he wanted to keep going. And then a year or two later, he saw Julie Moss finish the Ironman, you know, in the early 80s there. And he thought, well, could I do that? And he went out, and a couple years later, he was in Kona, you know, and he finished the Ironman. And so by the time I was 5 years old in 1988, and he signed up for the Leadville 100 run, you know, which at that time was a very obscure, small race. There weren't a whole lot of people doing ultra runs like they are now. You know, people didn't know a whole lot about training or nutrition or gear or, you know, anything like that. But they were doing it, you know, just for the love. So I signed up for Leadville. You know, probably didn't have the correct training or lead up to it. And in fact, he had never run further than a marathon. And in hindsight, I think that was kind of part of his plan, because, you know, if you run 50 miles, you think, oh God, how could I run 100? You know, yeah. Anyone smashed after 50 miles, and I know I always am too, but it's all about perspective. So anyway, signed up for 100, and we headed up there as a family, you know, me, my dad, my mom, my little sister, who was 3 years old at the time, and went to Leadville, and, you know, things went really smooth for the first 50 miles. He got to Winfield, I think somewhere around 12 hours or something like that, feeling good, beautiful sunny day, you know, figured he could easily make it back to to the start and finish within the 30-hour cutoff. So, excuse me. So he stopped and had a picnic with us, which I still remember. You know, that was kind of my first running memory, having a picnic with my dad at 50 miles at Leadville. I was wearing my black cutoff T-shirt with a cougar on the front and leopard tights. And, you know, I remember running with him out of Winfield there. And as listeners may guess, the race sort of went south from there. You know, he got tired. You know, it got dark. He had a flashlight from 7-Eleven and the batteries ran out. You know, he got sick and dehydrated and, you know, basically ended up, you know, puking kind of all the way in and really struggling to make it, and made it in just a few minutes before the 30-hour cutoff, you know, literally in dead last. But I can still remember, you know, I remember standing there on the boulevard at Leadville. You know, it's a special place, and anyone who's, you know, been there knows what it's like during that final hour of the Leadville 100, because they... you know, if you ask me, that's where heroes are made. You know, seeing those people finish is amazing. And I remember as a little boy seeing my dad come up the boulevard with the Rocky Mountains behind him. You know, just his body was broken, but he had a gleam in his eye. You know, that he was living. He was doing something important in life. And I didn't care that my dad was dead last place in the race. I just thought, you know, I want to be like my dad.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was kind of the start. I really didn't start running for a long time. You know, I played soccer, I played baseball, I played basketball. Finally started running in high school. Ran for a couple years in college at CU. Did some triathlons for a while. Really got into adventure racing at the end of college, and then kind of for the next 10 years, adventure races were really my focus. So I was lucky to really travel all over the world doing these long-distance, multi-day races in really cool places, you know, with great teams and that kind of stuff. And, you know, had a great experience seeing a lot of stuff. And excuse me. Then kind of last couple years I've shifted primarily to focusing on running, and that's been awesome too, kind of going back to my roots. And it's, my kids are 2 and 4 right now, so running is a great sport. You know, with kids, you go to races, they can see the race. The races aren't quite as long, even a long running race, usually most of them last a day or less, so you know, that's good for family stuff. And
sure.
You know, it's been a good way for us to have a lot of fun family trips.
Well, and it sounds like in a lot of ways, in terms of athletically, you've sort of even patterned a lifestyle similar to, you know, based on what I read in your book. Your dad really got into a lot of different sectors of sport. You know, from he was also an adventure racer as well as a mountain biker, and so sounds like you're beginning to give your kids some of those solidified memories of seeing dad, you know, out there, hopefully not too broken, but at times having to see you suffer a little bit as you come back through. And
You know, I heard I'm really into education. I'm really into parenting. You know, those are kind of two of my big interests. And I heard something from a parenting workshop the other day. You know, it was kind of the idea that, you know, when kids are growing up, the things, basically what we do as a family, as kids are forming their own identity kind of through the teenage years, the things that were what we do become who I am. And that's kind of, you know, it's just how you spend your time as a family, you know, that really impacts who your kids become. Yeah. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I don't care if my kids do endurance sports or whatever. I more of just care about, you know, do they find something that they're passionate about and enjoy pursuing that, you know? And it's good if that's something active, because that, you know, obviously I think helps you be healthy in body and positive in mind. But, you know, it can be whatever.
Sure.
You know, for me, it just happened to be that the stuff that my dad was doing, I, you know, liked. But there, I've developed many things that I like in my life that my dad was never into as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, every person is a dynamic individual that has many facets of them.
Would you say that the bonds that you formed with your dad at a young age have carried on today in terms of that relationship you have with him?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's true for both of my parents. I mean, I'm now that I'm a parent, I think I'm extremely lucky that I had my parents who modeled great parenting to me. So I know how to do that. But yeah, I'm really close with both of them. You know, one of the main reasons we live here in Evergreen is my parents still live here. And, when I was growing up, my grandparents were not nearby, and I want my kids to have that experience. And both of my kids get to spend a ton of time with my parents. They get to spend a lot of time with my wife's parents, who also live nearby. And that's huge for us. And honestly, very large in supporting my endeavors, you know, as a worker and as an athlete. You know, there's not many babysitters you can, you know, call on for, you know, a random run on, you know, late on a Sunday evening or something like that. But my mom is one of them. And, you know, it's super helpful to sustaining what I do.
Good deal. That's fantastic. So, Travis, I recently read a blog post that you wrote where you basically described a training weekend where you went up to Summit Lake near Mount Evans. It's one of our 14ers in Colorado.
Yep.
And describe just a little bit, you know, about the whole decision that you made that weekend to want to go pro, and just sort of what you meant by that and what that's led to.
Yeah, you know, well, the actual language of turning pro, per se, I get that from Stephen Pressfield, who's a very accomplished and well-known author of a number of novels and nonfiction books. But the two that have really impacted me are called The War of Art, which is about kind of the so-called resistance that any creative person faces, whether they're writing, creating art, could even be running or raising your children. He talks about that in The War of Art, and then the book that kind of follows up to it is called Turning Pro. And I didn't even read Turning Pro till after I wrote my own book. But as I read it, I kind of realized, wow, I had this moment where I was turning pro. And, you know, really what he means by turning pro is kind of flipping a switch in your head where you go from doing something, you know, as a amateur, if you will, you know, kind of doing it just for fun, to doing something for real in a professional way. And so for me, a moment that happened was, like you said, up at Summit Lake High on Mount Evans, late at night, up there by myself, you know, in the back of my truck camping, when I decided to write this book. And, you know, it was the summer of 2013, and I had a lot of great things going in my life. You know, I had a wonderful wife. I had two great children. You know, at the time, let's see, Wyatt was 2 years old, and Lila was like 6 months old about, and, you know, had those great things going on, and, you know, was enjoying my work as a high school teacher, and was doing well in the Lead Man Race Series, which was kind of my big goal for the summer. But I was also, you know, in the midst of all that, I was struggling with a professional decision, and I had signed up for a principal licensure program that would license me as a high school principal, and I was kind of, you know, that's the path I was on. I was completing the coursework, you know, working hard, writing essays, taking tests, you know, all those kind of, you know, things that you do in education, and, you know, and enjoying the education piece of it, because I like learning. But I was also struggling because I wasn't sure that I was pursuing that program for the right reason. And really, the conclusion that I came to, you know, through a lot of conversations with myself on runs and talks with my wife and my parents and friends, and you know, what I really decided that night was that this principal licensure program I was doing because of fear. You know, basically I was afraid that I wasn't making enough money as a teacher, and the next logical step seemed to become a principal where I would make more money. But I realized that's not how I want to spend my life, making decisions that are dedicated or dictated by fear. I realized I want to do things that I'm doing intentionally because it's what I want to do, even if it's a more risky or unsure endeavor. So,
sure.
You know, kind of up there under the stars, I decided to quit this program and to write a book, you know, because I had wanted to write a book for a long time. I thought that I had something to say that could help people. And you know, the idea was that by pursuing that, who knows what other doors would open as far as more coaching of athletes, more speaking, more time to pursue private business with my wife doing college counseling, all those kind of things. And, you know, it was very risky. There was, you know, a lot of fear. I was leaning into fear of what would happen by making this commitment, but I did it, you know, and sitting up there, I really made a commitment to myself and my readers that I'm going to write this book no matter what. You know, I had never written a book. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have a publisher. You know, I didn't know how to write a book or what would be involved, but I decided to do it and committed, and it happened. And
yeah.
I'm really glad I did.
Well, you bet. And again, we're going to get into a little more of the book here, but you mentioned the Lead Man. And that you were training for that, you know, as you were up there at Summon Lake, you know, and doing some stuff around Mount Evans. And I guess describe just briefly, you know, what is the Lead Man competition? And just for those listeners that really aren't familiar with that endurance feat.
Yeah, so it's, you know, there's the Leadville 100 race series, as I said, you know, back in the 80s, my dad was doing the Leadville 100 run, and that was the first event in the series. Subsequently, they added a 100-mile mountain bike, and then later on, they added a trail marathon, a 10K run. They got a 50-mile mountain bike, 50-mile run. Great races up in the town of Leadville. You know, I've been going to Leadville my whole life for, you know, camping, hiking, snowshoe racing, you know, running mountain bike races. I love the town. I have a lot of friends up there. And the series had become really close to my heart. You know, my dad started doing it, and, you know, it sort of later it became like this family reunion for us. My uncle Eric Pence has now finished Leadville 20 times, so, you know, we go up there and watch him. And when I was in college, the first time I paced him, I did 50 miles with him, you know, and that was a big experience for me. And
sure.
Then, you know, like my dad's friend Marshall Ulrich, you know, he's done it a bunch, and I paced him, you know, 40 or 50 miles one time, and, you know, that was another eye-opening experience. And my uncle Tim's finished it, my uncle Brian's finished it a few times, and my aunt Anne has finished it. And, you know, kind of be, you know, it's close to my heart. So I wanted to do this series of events, which basically involves doing all of their races throughout the summer. It's five races over the course of 6 weeks, and you're going for the lowest combined time. So it's a trail running marathon. The second thing is a 50-mile mountain bike or a 50-mile run. Then a few weeks later, you do the 100-mile mountain bike. The next day is a 10K run, and then the next weekend is a 100-mile run.
Wow! Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lot to do in 6 weeks, for sure. And you know, I was really psyched about it that year, and enjoyed giving it a crack.
Well, and give it a crack you did, because you went on that year to actually set the current record, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not the most, you know, competitive thing in the world, but, you know, I think I put a pretty good mark, and I'm excited to see people break it. You know, I mean, records are made to be broken. Well, yeah, you know, I was lucky to coach the guy, Bob Africa, who he finished second to me in 2013, and then 2014 he came back, and we worked together. You know, I was his coach, and he was able to win it, which was great. And, you know, it'd be great to see who does it this year. You know, I think it has to be someone who has a good level of experience in both running and mountain biking, and who commits to it for the summer. You can't really do anything else during that time, I think, to do well with it. So
yeah, I would say it's definitely one of those things that engulfs your focus and your time.
At least training wise, you know.
So, you know, just what's the difference between, you know, the feeling of winning it yourself, but also, you know, you're a coach as well. What's the feeling that you got when Bob actually won the race and you know, here you're his coach?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, Bob and I had quite a close race in 2013, and, you know, so I got to know him really well. I had known him previously, and seeing him work hard and win it was awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, you know, it's obviously different from doing your own thing, but I wouldn't say either one is better or worse. You know, anyone who's been a teacher or a coach or, you know, any way that you can work with someone and help them achieve something is very fulfilling to the person who's able to do the helping as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have a few people that I've coached, and it's really just as gratifying to see their success as your own, you know, and it's just fun to see the hard work pay off and know that gave them a few ingredients that happened to work and that their bodies, you know, adjusted to and synthesized. So getting into the book just a little bit here, you know, as the title suggests, you know, you have 8 mindsets that you focus on in your book. So I want you, one of them that was intriguing to me was the mindset number 2, which is be a wannabe. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what do you mean by, you know, being a wannabe?
Be a wannabe. Well, you know, so the title, it sort of comes from, I remember at least when I was in middle school, like the worst thing you could possibly be accused of being was a wannabe.
Yeah.
And as I look back on my life, not only as an athlete, but also as a, you know, as a professional worker, as a parent, you know, as a spouse, as a friend, those kind of things, I realized that I gained a lot by looking at people who were achieving similar goals to what I wanted to achieve and learning from those people. It's what psychologists call goal contagion, as I write about in the book. And there's a lot to be gained from watching someone achieve a certain goal and then emulating, okay, what are they doing? You know, what are the steps they took? What kind of mindset and attitude do they have in trying to learn from it? And that's kind of what I'm going for there. You know, I talk a lot about, you know, the various people that I've looked towards and people who I look towards now to try to learn from. And I think one of the key points is that naturally, oftentimes, especially when someone's close to us, let's say they're our close friend, you know, maybe you have a close friend who achieves a certain goal in a race, or, you know, they win the race, they win the money, they get the magazine article, you know, those kind of things. I see that a lot. You know, let's say my good buddy Dave Mackey, who's been a great friend of mine for years, he's an awesome ultra runner, you know, he wins a lot of races and stuff. You know, a natural inclination could be, okay, Dave wins a race, I might have a feeling of jealousy. You know, oh man, Dave won that. I you know, I got to do that. I got to, you know, whatever. Try to overcome him. You know, to do that myself. And I think that a key shift could be trying to move from jealousy to more of a supportive view of, okay, Dave, awesome job, and how can I learn from that? You know, what are you eating? How's your training going? You know, let's have a conversation, get out for a run and try to learn from you. It's really kind of, it's the difference between sort of a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset.
Yeah.
You know, another term from psychology that I talk about in the book.
Sure, yeah. And just, you know, kind of along those lines, you know, you mentioned a story about one of your fellow competitors. A guy named Josiah Middaw.
Yep.
And of course, many people have heard of him in the Xterra circles as a multiple-time champion, national champion, not just a regional champion.
Yep.
But
awesome runner too.
And a great runner, snowshoer.
Yep.
You know. So one of the things I got a kick out of in the book was your sort of analogy of, you know, okay, I'm getting second to this guy over and over again, and obviously you're kind of in the wannabe mindset.
Uh-huh.
You know, what's this guy doing? I need to find out what he's eating. You know, his best workouts. And I love the story about you sort of getting up the courage to actually ask him if he would coach you.
Yeah.
And you describe it sort of like you know, asking a cute girl out to the you know, to the dance, you know, in 8th grade, and just sort of those feelings that go along with it. But describe just briefly how that's transformed.
Yeah, you know, that I think I heard or read somewhere one time that, you know, a person's success or how far they go in life can be associated with how many uncomfortable conversations they're willing to have, and I think that should probably be attributed to someone. I don't know who it was, but I think there's a lot of truth to it, because in life, whether it's, you know, work or with your spouse or, you know, with your kids, your parents, there's uncomfortable conversations that are important to have. And that was an example of one of them. You know, I know that Josiah is coaching athletes. I'm sure that I can learn something from him, but he's, you know, he's my competitor. He's also my friend. You know, should he be my coach? How's this going to work? And, you know, kind of got up the courage and, you know, called him and asked him to be my coach. And he said, fine. And I think it all, you know, it took both of us setting our egos aside to have, you know, a coach-athlete relationship, even when we knew that while he was coaching me, we'd be competing head-to-head in some, you know, races that had some pretty good prize money. You know, one of them where I had finished second to him like 3 years in a row or something, and pretty close behind him. But, you know, we both went into it and put, you know, all our energy into it, and it was great. You know, I learned a ton about training and coaching, and, you know, he was a big piece of my Lead Man win that year.
So you'd probably agree that at times we need to humble ourselves in order to, you know, approach someone that we know we can benefit from and they can help us. We have to sort of get through that mindset that says, "Oh, you just need to do it yourself," and you know, don't get anything from anyone, because then you have to give them a little credit, and you know, that sort of competitive, you know, mindset that we have in our country. It's just sort of a breaking of the pride and saying, you know what, I can learn from this person.
Yeah, I think that's asking for help is huge. You know, I think that you know, one of the chapters says. have an ego and use it until it's time to throw out your ego and ask for help. And, you know, sort of what I mean by that is, it's, you know, you got to have a high view of yourself. But on the other hand, sometimes you have to be willing to be vulnerable. And that means putting yourself out there to ask for help, you know, sometimes in an uncomfortable way. Maybe that might be in a professional situation where you're asking a colleague for help with, you know, maybe it's something that you should know, but you don't know it. And you're asking for help, you know, in order to get better and learn. And I think some people limit themselves by being set on what they know or don't know or are good at or aren't good at, instead of just trying to get better and asking for help. And usually people are happy to help.
Sure, yeah. It's a, well, it's a principle that really does apply, you know, in any area of life and in terms of getting the help. Now, I'm going to read another little quote that I got a kick out of on page 69 of your book. And that quote goes like this: select the people you want to be like carefully, and then stalk them. No, not that kind of stalking. What I mean is that you should study them, observe them from close up or from afar. Learn about what they do to progress toward the same goals that you want to achieve. Make time to take them out to coffee or go for a run or a beer together, if possible. And so, kind of along that same mindset, you know, you're wanting to emulate people, really, right? I remember when I was growing up, I wanted to be like Michael Jordan.
Yep.
Oh, and so I used to practice the dunks on a 7'6" hoop.
Yep.
You know, just like he did in the dunk contests, and we used to even use a trampoline at times to try to get sideways, like he would, you know, seemingly do. But I know what you mean. It's that emulating, finding people that are near you that you can emulate, and sort of pattern some habits after.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, if I get to write the ultra mindset too, I think one of the chapters is going to be, you know, be a little kid. And it kind of goes back to what you said there. There's a lot of things that we do naturally as children that I'm getting to see now, you know, as my own kids grow up and stuff like that, you know, emulating people and exercising for fun and being playful and, you know, going outside and just, you know, making stuff up and inventing things and all that kind of stuff. And some of that we lose as adults or society tells us we should lose, or we think we're too busy with everything, so we can't do that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, by trying to be a little kid at times, you know, that stuff just comes back. All that's natural to little kids. You don't have to tell them to do that.
Sure.
You know,
you know, and You know, growing up, I was a big fan of the Chips TV show. You know, you had Frank Ponchirelli and John Baker, the two motorcycle cops, you know, that rolled down the LA highway busting people. And, you know, there were times when my buddy and I, he'd be Frank, I'd be John, you know, and we'd literally be those guys as we're running around the house, you know, acting like we're on a motorcycle. And so I think it's important, even into sport, and as you said, you know, just going right into the business sector, finding people. So another little, you know, you're a parent, you have two kids. What are the ages again?
They're 2 and 4 now.
2 and 4.
Yep.
And so as a parent trying to pursue the athletic goals that you have, what advice do you have for other parents out there that are also really endeavoring to achieve goals, or perhaps some of them that are saying, you know what, I want to take the leap of going pro.
Yeah, yeah.
Perhaps they have that ability. What advice do you have?
You know, I could talk about this all day, but there's two main things that come to mind. This is a subject I'm really passionate about and have thought a lot about, and provides inspiration to me, you know, if I can play some small role by setting an example of, you know, a parent who's trying to, you know, pursue something at a high level. And I think the first one is just simply put, you can do it. You know, if you want to do it, whether it's racing at a high level or, you know, doing whatever at a high level, you can do it, and you can set up your life in a way that allows you to do that and spend a lot of time with your kids each and every day. And that's what my wife and I have tried to do and worked hard to do. And, you know, I think a big piece of it is setting your priorities of, you know, what do you want your life to look like? You know, and what do you value? Do you value family time? Do you value money? Do you value a big house with lots of stuff? Would you rather have a small house with less stuff but more family time? You know, it's what do you want to have and how do you want to spend your time? And asking yourself those questions intentionally makes a big difference. I think a lot of times people, you know, we're told that, you know, making more money and having more stuff is inherently better. And if you don't question that, then you know, that's the cycle that you're in. And if you're in that cycle, you might not be able to pursue something else. But if you ask yourself those questions, you can do it, and you will. So that's the first one, is you can do it. And then the second one, I think this is just important, is I truly believe that having kids is a reason to pursue your own dreams, because your kids see what you do. What you do is much more important than what you say. And if you want your kids to grow up to be people who pursue their passions, whatever they are, you know, I said earlier, I don't care what my kids do. I want them to be passionate people who are excited about what they're doing with their lives. The way to teach them to do that is to do it yourself. And whether that's running or politics or business or, you know, starting your own business or fly fishing or whatever, you know, the way to teach your kids to do that is to do it yourself and to bring them along.
And your dad and your mom and dad modeled a lot of that, you know, for you growing up and things that you're, you know, a few things that you're passing along to your kids. So speaking of passion, you know, as we kind of wind down here, what would you say to the audience and those who are interested in, you know, continuing to learn more about you, and your, you know, what you offer through coaching and speaking? What would you say is your greatest passion?
My greatest passion? Wow. I feel fortunate to have many things that I'm passionate about. You know, I mean, my greatest passion at the core is my family. I mean, that's what my focus is. That's how I decide, you know, how do I spend my time? What am I going to pursue? Those kind of things. So, you know, if I had to give one answer, that's it.
Sure.
My greatest passion is being a husband and father.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of, I've always known that would be the case. You know, it's always been, you know, even when I was a kid, I always knew I wanted to have my own kids and be married and make that my focus. And, it's probably something I got from my parents, because that's, you know, they always said that was the most important thing to them.
Yeah. Well, and it's obvious that it's a priority for you, and and it's you're sowing stuff into your kids and your family now that will be invaluable, you know, down the road, and you just can't put a price tag on the bonding time and the stuff that you pour into your family. And it's just awesome that you've learned that as a young dad.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Well, you know, one other thing I'll add about the parenting stuff, you know, people, if there's something that you want to pursue, a big piece of it is stories, the stories we tell ourselves, and that's something I talk about in the book. And I think it's very natural and easy to fall into negative stories about, I'm so busy, I'm so stressed, I have one kid so I can't do anything, now I own a house so I can't, you know, do this, you know, I kind of, as these responsibilities grow up, you know, now I have two kids so I can't do anything, now I have three kids so, you know, I have to stop doing this or that. You know, these are all stories, and those negative stories can be true if you want to believe them, but you can also rewrite them and replace them with other stories if you want to. And those can be just as true. And that's something I still face every day. You know, like I said, I'm lucky to have lots of time day in and day out with the 2-year-old and 4-year-old, but that can generate stress and challenges too. You know, and when things are falling apart, you know, in the afternoon when both kids are tired, you know, negative stories creep in pretty easy. And I intentionally tell myself, you know, value this time. My kids are going to be, they're going to be at school all day before I know it, and I'm not going to have this time. So, you know, value this time, even if it's tough in the moment.
Yeah, instead of wishing your life away. Sort of, well, once I get exactly to this point in life, yep, then I'll arrive or I'll finally do this, instead of enjoying the moment, like
yeah,
you
that's,
said.
That's a great way to put it. And that what you said right there is something I've, you know, really tried to focus on recently.
So, you know, recently you said you've gotten more into running. Obviously, you have a mountain biking and adventure racing background as well. And so you've been focusing a little more time and attention on running. What are a couple of your next big goal races?
Well, my next thing is a training run. So on May 1st, a group of us are going to run from here in Evergreen down to Denver for a book talk at the Tattered Cover. So that's on May 1st. It's an open invite. If anyone wants to come, just go to my website, travismacy.com, and send me a message, and I'll tell you how to meet us. So we're doing that a couple weeks later. Middle of May, there's it's called Peak Ultra. It's a 50-mile race in Vermont, which I'm really excited about. I was able to spend some time in that area leading outdoor trips when I was in college, and so psyched to get back there. And then later in the summer, got the Wasatch 100. So that's in Utah in September. Really looking forward to that one. You know, it's kind of one of the classic 100 milers, you know, that you hear about growing up. So I'm looking forward to that. And probably some other stuff in the summer. Kind of thinking about the Nolan's 14. It's kind of a 14-14ers. So that'd be, you know, I love being in the mountains, like that kind of stuff. I like navigating with a map. That could be fun.
Yeah. So, again, folks, I've been talking with Travis Macy, the author of the book, The Ultra Mindset, An Endurance Champion's 8 Core Principles for Success in Business, Sports, and Life. And again, that just released yesterday, April 14th. And Travis, people want to get the book. Where can they find it?
You know, probably the best place right now, if you go to theultramindset.com, we just started a prize contest thing with a whole bunch of race entries and giveaways from some of my sponsors like Vitargo, Hoka 1-1, Ultimate Direction, and Gingy, Spartan Race, and a few others. So if you go there, you could find how to get the book and enter that contest if you buy a book. So that could be a spot. But it's also in bookstores. You know, it's in Barnes & Noble and those kind of places, and it's on Amazon as well.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, as you mentioned, you're a coach. You're also a motivational speaker. And if people are interested in bringing you to their event or their race as part of the weekend festivities, where can they find you?
Same place, travismacy.com or theultramindset.com. They actually go to the same site. So put either one of those in and you'll find me on there. I always tell people I love to hear from people. If anyone reads this book and and you like something or dislike something or whatever, get in touch with me, you know, whether it's through Facebook or email or whatever. The book was written to help people, and I'd love to hear what people think of it.
Awesome. Well, I can speak from experience, and I've been going through the book, and I really have enjoyed it. I love how you tell good stories, and you relate a lot of your ups and downs, you know, in the endurance sector to life, and it's applicable for, as the title says, people in business, people in life, just going day to day as parents, and I think you've done a great job, and we're excited to see it sell some copies.
Well,
and,
thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's been an honor to be with you and your listeners, like I said.
Wish you well, Travis. And again, you've been listening to the Train Well, Race Well podcast, where we talk about all things running. And for CJ Hitz and our guest, Travis Macy, we'll see you on the roads or the trails.
All righty. See you out there, folks.